Contrary to everything we have been led to believe by Joel Embiid himself, he now says he wants Simmons to remain with the Sixers. Joel Embiid is lying here. He does not want to play with Ben Simmons, and he said so previously. He does not want to because Ben Simmons can't shoot and is afraid to shoot late in games because he doesn't want to go to the line where he also can't shoot. And so it all falls on Embiid, which Embiid has said.
To be a fan of both the Sixers and Ben Simmons, as I am, is to be an endangered NBA species at this point. Because the city of Philadelphia wants Ben out. And Ben, officially, now feels the same way. And so this house is just divided against itself. But the most maddening part of all of it is that it did not have to be this way. Today, Brian Windhorst takes us behind the scenes of a complicated, high-stakes negotiation and a soap opera that is testing the definition of power in the NBA. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, September 10th. This is ESPN Daily. So, Brian Windhorst, as you might suspect, I think, I have not been doing so well with the whole Ben Simmons thing. I mean, I've been preparing myself for this for months now psychologically, but it mostly just turns out that I've covered this recording closet with all of this red conspiracy theory yarn because I am still trying to figure out how this can end well, maybe, for both the Sixers and for Ben Simmons and also for me. So I just appreciate you being my therapist here.
Well, I wish I could promise a resolution, but like many therapists, all we can do is string it along and hope you feel marginally better.
Brian Windhorst hosts the Hoop Collective podcast, and he's been helping me work through the seven stages of Sixers grief. So let's string it along here, Brian. Tell me, as you understand it right now, what is the latest on this situation? What is the overview? How does everything look to you at this moment?
Right. So to give you a very brief timeline here, obviously it was a very disappointing end to the Sixers season, getting upset in the conference semis by the Atlanta Hawks.
Embiid spins, lost the handle. Gallinari got a piece. Is Gallinari down? It goes. And the Atlanta Hawks up six now. This is going to be heartbreak in back-to-back years for the Sixers, the top seed in the East, Jimmy, and they are on their way out here in round two.
Ben Simmons played poorly in that series, especially late in games, basically refused to shoot.
Boy, Simmons, uncontested, had a layup, but he leaves it for Thibault.
That's when you know that the game is in your head. That's a dunk for Ben Simmons right there. You got to shoot that shot. Be confident that if you do get fouled, that you can make the free throw with an and one.
Doc Rivers and Joel Embiid had some quasi-critical and maybe just flat-out critical comments of his play.
I'm going to say flat-out critical is the direction I'm going to lean. Because, look, I mean, what Joel said after the game immediately.
I don't know how to say it, but I thought the turning point was just, you know, we had an open shot and, you know, we made one free throw and we missed the other, and then they came down and scored.
That is Joel clearly pointing to the now infamous sequence, obviously, where Ben could have dunked but passed instead, effectively taking 1 point off the board for their team. But then Doc, who, by the way, like Joel, also struggled in this loss, he went on to offer one of the most crushing post-game assessments from a coach I think I've ever heard.
Do you think Ben Simmons can still be a point guard for a championship team like the one you guys want to become?
Yeah, David, I don't know that question or the answer to that right now. So I don't know the answer to that.
That is a set of pretty brutal words as I read them.
Not something that you would like your coach to say, but also not an unfair statement in that moment. I think he was being honest, although maybe honesty isn't always the best policy. So shortly after that, from what I understand, Ben basically asked to be traded. And the Sixers went about having calls about Ben Simmons' trades. the ask that the Sixers were making for Ben Simmons was akin to some of the trade offers that the Houston Rockets got for James Harden, basically akin to a first team all NBA player MVP candidate. You know, they were asking, you know, huge premium for him, so much so that teams really didn't even feel like they were trade talks because the, you know, I'd like to buy your house. Okay, what are you offering? We're offering $1. I mean, did I offer to buy your house? Did we have a discussion about your house? I guess we did, you know, but the two sides were so far apart that other teams basically were like, you know, they don't really want to trade Ben Simmons. They're just sort of going through the motions. The other teams were kind of like Daryl Morey, the president, wants to save him and look to maybe trade him later, maybe for a guy like Damian Lillard, who over the summer was rumored to be on the edge of asking for a trade from the Trailblazers. That ask never came. Or even maybe a guy like Bradley Beal, who we think is intending to stay in Washington, but in early October, he has the opportunity to extend his contract, and whether he does or not will say a lot about the trade market for the upcoming season. So Ben Simmons, you know, I don't know for sure on this, but I'm pretty sure he got that message that they were having trade talks as he requested, but not having serious trade talks. And so right there before Labor Day, Josh Harris, the owner of the Sixers, Doc Rivers, and Daryl Morey, the coach and president, flew out to Los Angeles, where Ben has been all summer working out, for a meeting. From what I understand, in that meeting, you know, basically they were saying, hey, Ben, we tried to trade you, but we couldn't get a deal. So let's try to get on the same page here and move forward, and we'll go into the season and see what happens. Apparently, from what I am told, Ben sat and looked at him and said, not only do I want to be traded, if you don't trade me, I will not come to training camp. And for a player to say that to an owner, I mean, you know, trade demands happen all the time in the league. In fact, there's a lot of them that happen that we never know about, and they either get fulfilled or they don't. But it's one thing for an agent to say it to the general manager. It's another for the player face-to-face, in person, to say it to the owner. And usually when that happens, it's curtains. The difference in this situation, as you well know, is that he has 4 years left on his contract. He doesn't have the leverage that comes with a short contract. And so how that plays out will be interesting.
So this scene in which multi-bazillionaire, as the New York Times had deemed him in a headline, private equity prince Josh Harris is sitting across from Ben Simmons. And Ben Simmons is trying, along with his camp, his representatives, Rich Paul and Clutch, the agency that also represents LeBron James, famously, they're trying to generate leverage. This feels like an extreme experiment in how a player can squeeze power where power may not conventionally be found.
Right. At the bedrock of this, Pablo, is I think that Ben doesn't want to be in Philadelphia anymore. And I know that that's a simple statement, but he really, really doesn't want to play in that situation in front of those fans. And so I really do believe that the agent, in this case, Rich Paul, is reacting to his player's desire to not play.
Did you blame him? Like, Brian, I don't blame Ben at all for wanting out, given the litany of things you've just described, from his star teammate to his head coach to the fan base, which has demanded that he leave. And now here he is saying, oh, okay, you want to get rid of me? Well, so do I. And that leaves Philly and this organization with a real mess.
Right. So really what he is doing is he's saying, my leverage is going to be that every day in training camp that you're going to be asked about Ben Simmons. What's happening with Ben? What are you going to do with Ben? That is where the leverage comes in, is the headache that it will become such a distraction that they'll make the deal.
Let me ask you this point blank, though, Brian. Has there been a fan base, a collective media organism, as there is in Philly, that has so collectively turned on a player who is, on paper at least, a cornerstone?
He's a very unpopular superstar.
It's wild to me.
you know, depending on who you ask from Australia, they may disagree, but he is the greatest and most talented player in Australian basketball history. But he's really disliked there, you know, especially because he wouldn't play for their national team in the Olympics, which was a very important Olympics for the Australians this year. He was very, very heavily criticized. So his Q rating pretty much in his two homes, so to speak, Philadelphia, you know, and Australia is not good. So, I mean, I think really it's that Lifetime Fitness or wherever he works out in LA. He seems to be very comfortable there. Outside of there, I'm not so sure where there's people embracing Ben Simmons right now.
Yeah, it is a real lonely island right now, Brian. But I do want to be fair to the anti-Simmons camp as well, because I think they're disproportionately rabid, but I also get it. I get that they want him to shoot jumpers. I get that they want him to shoot threes. I get that they want him to shoot a lot better than 34% from the free throw line in the playoffs, as he did this postseason, which was historically awful. And I agree also, by the way, that Ben Simmons clearly lost confidence in himself against the Hawks. And I know that because he took a total of 3 shots in the fourth quarter across 7 games, which he also knows is unacceptable.
I had a bad series. I didn't shoot well from the line this series. Offensively, I wasn't there. I ain't doing enough for my teammates. There's a lot of things I need to work on.
But the question now, I think, is how risky holding out from training camp and then ostensibly actual regular season games, how risky all that would be for a stock that seems to have already bottomed out.
The thing about it is that, you know, he is uniquely positioned on this holdout.
Mm.
The way his contract is paid out, Pablo, he'll have earned 50% of his contract by October 1st. So within a day or two of coming into training camp, he will have already been paid $16.5 million of the $33 million he's owed, will already be in his bank account.
Wow.
And certainly the Sixers can fine him and, you know, start peeling away from that extra $16 million. And not that I think that he needed that check to make his mortgage payment this month, but, you know, part of the reason why I think he is going to be comfortable and not turned off by any potential fine is that they've already paid him for 41 of the 82 games he's scheduled to, you know, to play.
Just so I clarify, what is on the table for the Sixers here? So the CBA allows them to, I know, shave money off by fine, but outside of those paper cuts, essentially, is there anything else that they can do when a player just says, you know what, I'm out. I'm just not going to show up at all.
In 2021, they probably cannot. Most players in the modern era get what they want. It is a long time been a saying in Hollywood that a contract is over when the talent says that it's over. And that has increasingly become a reality in the NBA as well. And Ben Simmons may not win, quote unquote, this situation, may not be exactly to his liking. But if he wants a trade and he's willing to stick it out, he's probably going to get that trade.
So I need to figure out where Ben Simmons might be going. In that case, Brian, and how his skill set might look after leaving Philly. After the break.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's So let's look at Ben Simmons, the player here, for a second, Brian, because that does oftentimes get lost as Philadelphia news media is comparing him to a trash can floating down floodwaters, as he is a viral meme in all of the worst ways. All of that stuff tends to obscure what the asset is, so to speak, in NBA parlance. What is the asset here for those who are unfamiliar with Ben Simmons, the player?
Well, he's a top 10 defensive player in the NBA, really without question. And other people would argue he's top three or top five.
Yes.
And in the current NBA, where you really need to have versatility on defense because of modern defenses require you to guard, be able to guard as many different types of players as possible, his versatility is worth platinum. It's weight in platinum because he is almost 7 foot tall and he's got great quickness and great hands. So on defense, he can guard the point guard. He can guard the center. He can shut down elite scorers or make it very difficult on them. He's got good shot blocking instincts. Also, when he is able to create a turnover or get a rebound, he is terrific in the open floor, throwing the ball ahead, starting a fast break. I mean, he is elite in this regard.
He's so fast at 7 feet tall, 240-ish. He is as fast as anybody end to end, which, yeah, creates offense off of turnovers in ways that few other players can dream of doing.
Right. And so one of the things that's also very attractive about him as a player is that he is signed to a 4-year contract. So unlike so many star players who, when they demand a trade, usually it's when they've maybe got a year left on their contract. If you trade for him, you know that you're going to have him for 4 years unless he demands another trade. It's almost like being able to sign a free agent. So that's why, you know, you have seen teams like Minnesota or Cleveland, small markets that probably wouldn't have the opportunity to sign a free agent like Ben Simmons, show some interest in trading for him, because getting him with 4 years left on his contract, especially at his young age, he's like 21 or 22. That is just, it's very unheard of. And even the flaws that he would have in his game, you know, would be worth it. I think he would have a lot of value on a team like that more than he would have on the Sixers. Now, I suspect that that team that traded for him might in 3 years want more out of him, just like the Sixers, now that they've, you know, elevated into elite status, want more out of him.
Yeah.
But that is why there absolutely will be a market. The issue is, after he just had the worst season, the teams who are looking to trade for him, they are not offering anywhere near their premium package that Philadelphia has shown that they want.
And that's where the Rivers and the Embiid commentary, Brian, which went global as soon as those quotes were said, that's why it feels like if they actually wanted Ben Simmons to be out of their lives, Ben Simmons, the guy who was third team All-NBA the season before last, the guy who was last season the runner-up defensive player of the year, the guy who has point guard skills and a center's body, blah-blah-blah, I have said this for eons now, the guy who is basically a flying car without a stereo, that guy, if they wanted him out of their lives, like, it felt like they should be sounding more like me. Right? Like, they should have praised him as opposed to tank his value by actually being way too honest. Because Embiid, Brian, in the last week or two, he finally came around and went on Twitter and said, "Stop using my name to push people's agendas. I love playing with Ben. Stats don't lie. He's an amazing player. We all didn't get the job done. It's on me personally. I hope everyone is back because we know we're good enough to win." All of which would be exactly what I would have wanted to hear at the podium after Game 7, as opposed to fundamentally the opposite. Because what I'm thinking if I'm Ben Simmons is, why did it take you almost 3 months to say this publicly, long after all of the garbage was thrown in my way?
Well, boy, you could deploy some psychologists on that, because it kind of looked like he was saying he wanted to play with Ben and that, you know, don't blame me, I'm not driving Ben away. But then when you peel a layer back, he was saying things like, you know, I got booed and I worked through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kept working and I got through it, which you could interpret as him basically preaching to Ben, toughen up, come back and work through it. And from what I understand, Ben is not communicating with his teammates or the team very much right now. And so those comments that Joel tweeted out, frankly, may have been a message to get his words to Ben's ear, because he's not sure that Ben is even reading his text messages right now. I do think that the damage is probably incurable, at least in the short term, between them. But even if Embiid and Doc Rivers hadn't have said what they said, we all saw the way Ben played, and his value would have been harmed. It's just that when Doc and Embiid said that, in addition to the trade demand, it just really lowers the Sixers' bargaining position, because everybody knows that the players and the coach aren't really down with the guy.
And as a guy who has finally come to terms with the fact that as much as Joel and Ben can anchor the best team in the East together, that they are never going to be their best individual selves together, I would like to formally buy stock in Ben Simmons right now. I would like to actually buy as much stock as I can in the revival of a non-shooting defensive center who also happens to be one of the best passers in the league, especially, Brian, if you put him in a place like Golden State.
Well, that's a very interesting one, because the Warriors have the type of players on their roster who potentially could be interesting to the Sixers. They have young players. And when you think about Golden State, you know, the idea that they are able to manage their shooting has been so good when Klay and Steph are there, that they're able to manage a guy in Draymond Green who can't shoot but can defend at a very high level and also play make at a very high level. The idea that they could integrate another defender who's so dynamic as a playmaker and defender, and you know, the idea of having Draymond and Ben to facilitate and having Klay and Steph to shoot and figuring out who the fifth guy is going to be, depending on how the trade would go. You can certainly see why that would be attractive. And, you know, the Warriors are ready to enter back into the championship race, which Ben would allow that to do. Now, whether or not Golden State offers something that or possible Golden State offer, I don't know if they have offered. Whether that type of package is something that Philadelphia thinks can get them towards a championship status, I mean, that's for Daryl Morey to decide. I will say that historically, Daryl has hunted star players. And he was a general manager in Houston. You know, he hunted James Harden. He hunted Dwight Howard. He hunted Russell Westbrook. He hunted Chris Paul.
Carmelo Anthony.
Yes. You know, he's always hunted for those stars. I don't think he's looking for Andrew Wiggins and some young developing players. I think he's looking for, like I said earlier, Bradley Beal or Damian Lillard. So you can come up with trades that make a lot of sense, but if they don't have the star power, I'm not sure Daryl Morey is interested in them.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, Brian, given how invested Daryl is in the present. But after the break, I want to take a closer look at the other power player in this entire equation and how this all fits into a larger power struggle that's been reshaping the NBA.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
All right, so beyond the possibility, Brian, of Ben finding Nirvana in Golden State, or Portland, or Washington, or Minnesota, or I guess even Indiana or Cleveland now, as the latest list of landing spots suggests, I do want to dive into the key figure who's operating behind the scenes here, because that is Ben's agent, Rich Paul, who you alluded to before, and his agency, Clutch Sports, because Rich I mean, Rich is one of the great stories in sports history, right? Like, let alone basketball history. He went from being a guy who sold throwback jerseys out of his car to a member of LeBron's inner circle to now maybe the most famous and most feared agent in the entire league. So how would you describe the power of Rich Paul in the modern NBA?
Well, first off, I'm going to tell you that I've known Rich Paul for almost 20 years. having said that, we are not friends. We've had pleasant conversations. We've had uncomfortable conversations. He has been fiery mad at me. He has been very happy with me. It is, you know, when I speak about Rich, it is of me knowing him, not defending him. I will say that Clutch has come to prominence in an era that coincides with player empowerment in the league. Player empowerment era, in my mind, really reached a new level in 2014. That was when LeBron James essentially put the Cleveland Cavaliers together, arriving in Cleveland and trading, instructing the Cavs to trade draft picks away for Kevin Love and basically deciding who they were going to trade for him. And it has followed on from there. We were building to that for a while, but that was when it happened. And it also coincided with Adam Silver becoming the commissioner of the NBA. Adam Silver is dramatically more player-friendly than David Stern was.
Yes.
He has basically rolled back any kind of discipline or regulations across the board on players. When you talk to executives, they'll say they do whatever they want. It's not quite whatever they want, but relative to the David Stern era, it is whatever they want. He has won concessions from players, certainly when it's come to playing through the pandemic and following protocols that has saved the league and generated billions of dollars in revenue, and that is his MO. But Adam Silver has basically worked hand in hand with star players in the league to operate the league since he's come here. The rise of the player power is absolutely related to that. And Clutch is the agent for the player empowerment. Clutch is on the cutting edge of that. You know, if you're Anthony Davis and you are not happy in your situation in New Orleans and you hire Rich Paul, and within 18 months you've been traded to the team you want, Los Angeles, you've won a ring, and because you got traded there, you were able to sign a 5-year max contract and made $40 or $50 million more than you would have if you had stayed in New Orleans and signed outright. If you're Anthony Davis, how do you not give Rich 5 stars in a rating? And I understand that if you're a Pelicans fan, you don't like him. Ultimately, he's not there to make nice with teams and make fans like him. He's there to deliver for the players. One of the things that I've seen about Rich is that, he won't send a certain player to this team, or he wants all players out of this team. Like, you know, in reference to Philadelphia, there have been reports that Tyrese Maxey, who's their young guard, who frankly might replace Ben Simmons as their starting point guard, he is also a Clutch client, and that he wants Ben out of there and he wants Tyrese Maxey out of there. That is not the Rich Paul that I've known for 20 years. The Rich Paul that I've known for 20 years will knock down, drag out, and have a fight over player A. And when that business is concluded, and now we're talking about player B, it's fresh business. It has nothing, player A has nothing to do with it. Rich is a bit of a lightning rod. He's also somebody that, you know, allows, you know, feature stories to be written on him and by the New Yorker and Sports Illustrated, and shows up at public events with Adele sitting next to him.
That's right. I forgot about Adele. Whatever. I was wondering, when would we get to the fact that Rich Paul is allegedly involved with Adele?
I guess involved is the best way to put it. I don't exactly know how to term it, but
I don't either. Hollywood relationships, man, I don't really know how to define any of them, to be honest.
I think Rich draws an unfair amount of attention, and that probably benefits him and hurts him at the same time.
So just to put a very specific point on this, Brian, what does Rich do that's different from the other agencies that makes him this figure in a way that is earned as opposed to merely reputational?
I think Rich goes for the home run more than his peers and his other agents, where, you know, in the case of Nerlens Noel, he told Nerlens, forget about the $70 million. If you wait a year, you can get 100. That type of thinking is the type of thinking that built Rich Paul's business way beyond LeBron James. Willing to hold players out of summer league and all the way almost up into training camp to fight for little pieces of incentives in rookie contracts, which they did. That is what he does that other agents don't. And when you do that with 15, 20, 25 clients, you're going to upset people and you're going to miss some time. He has been burned. Like what happened with Nerlens, I think, hurt him. You know, he had another client, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who turned down an $80 million offer from the Pistons and then never really made up that money. Sometimes you bet on yourself and win. Sometimes you bet on yourself and lose.
All of that, which you just said about how Rich does business, when you look ahead to how this preseason, the beginning of the regular season, training camp, how that's going to go, what's it going to be like, do you think, as Ben and the Sixers and Daryl Morey are all seemingly dug in their own particular ways?
So a lot of it will depend, I think, on how the Sixers start the season. If they start the season poorly, have an early season losing streak, the people in Philadelphia and the media are going to be all over them about Ben Simmons. Who knows? Maybe there will be a player somewhere else that will demand a trade and all of a sudden there's business to be done, or there'll be an injury somewhere else and something else will open. I mean, that's really the play that Ben is having. They say that if you don't, you know, like the question, just, you know, answer a different one. If you don't like the situation, just wait for it to change. And so that's essentially what Ben is doing.
They're basically waiting, Brian. They're waiting for other people's relationships to fall apart in ways that may even outstrip their own, so that seemingly Daryl Morey can feel like, okay, time to go be a vulture harvesting the broken love of Damian Lillard and the Portland Trail Blazers or Bradley Beal and the Washington Wizards, so that way Ben Simmons can finally get his freedom.
People ascribe Daryl Morey as the guy who brought analytics to the NBA, and he definitely played a huge role in that. But what you just said is really more defined Daryl's tenure, which is yes, to be the vulture to take advantage when somebody is at odds with their team. You add all the ingredients here, what you have is a stalemate.
Brian Windhorst, as I get ready for war, thank you so much for clarifying the stakes.
Settle in, Pablo.
Yeah, helmets on. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Mike Philbrick, Andy Tennant, Eve Troh, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Andre Soto, Christian Gardner, Garrett Lang, and Jackson Udgelo. I'll talk to you Monday.